Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome to another exciting episode of Psychology Talks. And today we're going to discuss one of my most favorite topics, which is very close to my heart. And I've been looking for this episode for so long because in this episode, we're going to discuss about the realms of dream, the world of dreams. We'll discuss that how these dreams can impact our waking life, how our subconscious mind gives us messages about our waking life. So in this episode, we're going to uncover the mysteries of the world of dreams, which we delve into every night. But most of the time, people do not remember or do not give importance to all these dreams. But every night, our inner wisdom or our soul gives us message to maybe improve ourselves or to improve the people around us. And that's why I have invited one of the most amazing person who is the authority on this subject matter. His name is Dr. Antonio Zatra, and he is an expert in the dream science. He's a prominent authority in the field, and he's done some groundbreaking research as the head of the largest dream lab in Canada. His role is a professor in the Department of Psychology at the Université de Montréal. Coupled with his extensive research at the Center of Advanced Research in Sleep Medicine, he has significantly contributed to our understanding of intricate working of dream mind. And he is a distinguished author of this book, if you can see, When Brains Dream. And in this book, he has given a detailed information and knowledge about how and why our mind dreams and what we can have the understanding from all these dreams. So let's welcome Dr. Antonio. Hello, Dr. Antonio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you with us, and our audience, like, and me also, eager to listen more on this topic from you, because you have done a lot of research on that, and we're going to discuss about it. So I've given a little bit of introduction about you, that you have written the book and you have done extensive work in this field, but let our audience know that why and how you came into this field and what struggles you faced.
Sure. So how I came to this field is actually sort of an unusual story, but basically I decided to at least try to become a dream sleep researcher because of a dream I had when I was in college. So at the time, I have an older brother. He was in medical school. My default plan growing up was to also go in medical school. And when I was in college, I had this very, very long, hyper-vivid lucid dream, a dream in which we become aware that we're dreaming. Now, I had had them before as a younger child and as an adolescent, but never one like this one where I was stabbed, I had physical pain, I could feel the warmth of my blood. I met fascinating dream characters, including one who tried to convince me that the whole experience wasn't a dream. And throughout all of this, I knew that my physical body was in my bed sleeping. And so I was like, how can I be in this hyper-realistic virtual world? And at one point, I even tried yelling, and I could hear my booming voice, but I knew that I was quiet in my bed. Anyways, that first dream is the first dream that I ever wrote down, and it led me to try to start reading more about sleep and dreams. And I actually took a year off from school to think about all of this, and finally I decided, okay, we'll try to make this work. And luckily for me, things worked out. But of course, you know, your prospects for work in life are quite different if you're going to medical school versus if you're going to do something called dream science.
Yeah.
Especially back at the time where there were very few people interested, at least in academia, interested in dreams or doing dream research, very little opportunity for funds or even jobs, what have you. But like I said, in the end, things worked out and I have no regrets. I think you are...
So I was muted, but now I'm not. So yeah, you shared that, you know, there was one dream and which was recurrent, which actually made you or forced you to be in this dream, in this field. So maybe you can share, because, you know, that was when actually I saw your speech on in the TED Talks and on the YouTube, that actually fascinated me, because I think there are a lot of people who may have that kind of dream and they may be questioning that how they can actually make sense to their waking life. Maybe you can share a little bit more about that dream.
Sure. So the dream started off where I am in college and I am accused of a crime that I didn't commit. And then I'm convicted and sent to jail. And the jail is my college, actually. But it's all dark with these underground passages. And while I'm in the jail, I meet a few people that I knew when I was in elementary school, and they're also in jail, and they say, stay close to us, we'll protect you because it's very dangerous in here. But the main character who offered to protect me, that that I knew from my hometown, he's the one who ends up stabbing me with a knife, stabs me in the abdomen. And like I said earlier, the pain was excruciating. I could feel the warmth of my blood and its thickness as it was pooling out of my stomach. And there's also a power failure that happens. And then everyone is trying to escape the prison and people are running down these hallways and everyone is turning left down a hallway when we get to a dead end, except the person in front of me goes right. And I figure either he's an idiot or he knows what he's doing because everyone else is going the other way. Anyway, so I follow him and he opens this door and we're all in this big green yard with grass. But there's these light structures like you see in outdoor soccer fields, arenas, you know, these very high structures with all these lights on it. And on these lights are sharpshooters. And they start shooting bullets at us.
Oh.
And the guy running in front of me gets riddled with bullets and dies before my eyes. And I keep running and I see the bullets landing in the grass all around me, but I'm not hit. Mm-hmm. And as I approach the end of the yard, there's this huge fence with barbed wires at the top. And I keep telling myself, I need to clear the fence. I need to clear the fence. But the fence is like, you know, maybe 8-10 meters high. But I jump and I'm able to jump right over the whole fence. And on the other side, I land in a big pile of snow. And it's when I landed in the snow that I went, something is not right. And when I turn around, I see the yard and I still see grass. There's no more sharpshooters or commotion. I touch my abdomen, my scar injury has healed, but it still hurts. Mm-hmm. And then I put my hand in the snow and I can feel the coldness of the snow. And I'm going, how can this be so realistic when I'm still probably in my bed? And I decided to make a snowball and to throw it to the first person I see, which was this rather large man walking nearby. And I throw the snowball. And he got very angry at me and threatened to beat me up. And so I went, I better be dreaming because maybe then I wasn't quite. Anyways, and then later I started walking in this dream and I meet a few characters. And there's one where I start talking with. And I tell him, you know, none of this is real. I'm actually in my bed sleeping. and all of this is a dream. And he just laughed, but with a very insightful, deep look in his eye. And that's what really stunned me. There was like a realness behind his eyes. And he said, look, I also sleep. I also dream. I'm not telling you that you're not real. And he goes, this is a real world. Mm-hmm. And so this was really, and then I woke up shortly afterwards. And this character here became a recurrent character in my dreams for several decades. So I would dream on, I might go 6 months, a year without dreaming about him, and then maybe have two dreams of him in the same week. And he became almost like a dear friend, if we want. unfortunately, I haven't dreamt about him now for many, many years. And it actually saddens me because it's I really enjoyed our conversations in our dreams. And in our dreams, he's able to well remember our previous dreams we've had together. And at times, even better than I do in the dream. I remember them well once I wake up, but not necessarily in the dream. Anyway, so that all got me interested in dreams, how the brains create these virtual worlds, how they create dream characters, how dreams unfold are kept from the dream characters. Because even in a dream, you can ask a character a question.
Yeah.
But you don't know how they're going to respond, what their answer is going to be. But to the extent that your mind is creating this character, your mind knows it. And so I like to say you're not the producer, director of the dream. Your mind is. And you're just, you have only access to a very small part of the script. Anyway, so these are the questions that as a 17, 18-year-old got me really interested. And at the time, some of the first studies coming out of Stanford University on a study of lucid dreaming in the sleep laboratory. And so that allowed me to realize, okay, there's actually a few people doing actual work in sleep labs on dream. Yeah. And so it's possible.
Yeah. So what actually I would say that what meaning you drew from that dream, that how it impacted your life, or maybe even when you were having the conversation with that character, does it have any relevance with the waking life, or it was just the fantasies? Or
well, I think that, you know, most dreams, or at least a good proportion of dreams that we recall, are, I believe, embodiments of ongoing concerns, preoccupations that we have, often in more metaphorical terms, which is just like our waking language is filled with metaphors and simile just when we speak. In this particular dream, I don't think it was so much the meaning as the experience itself. Okay. And so the experience itself was eye-opening about how can the brain go about creating these worlds, and why do we do it, and why do most people never remember any of their dreams? Even high dream recallers, they might remember a handful of dreams a week, or maybe one or two in the morning, but we spend at least an hour and a half, two and a half hours every night immersed in the stage of sleep known as REM sleep, where most vivid dreaming takes place, of which we recall virtually nothing. So these are more, the experience was less about the meaning, what does it mean, and more of how does the brain go about creating this and why?
Yeah, that's the major question, that, like, you know, when our mind creates such fascinating stories with so much reality in it. So what is the meaning of it? I mean, like, every day we go into these realms of dream and we experience a different kind of world, but how it is affecting our waking life, does it have any meaning, or is just the random visions or random stories or thoughts create these kind of stories in our mind?
Well, I think there's really two questions in what you ask. Because I think what you're really asking is, does do any of these experiences, do dreams have a function?
Yeah.
And I think, do they have meaning is something else. Do they have meaning is, of the dreams we remember, is there a way, do they mean something? Are they metaphorical? Yeah. How do we untangle? And mm-hmm. that's quite different from, do they have a function? Okay. It's like the heart. You have your heart and it makes a sound because it's a mm-hmm. muscle and it pumps blood. But the function of the heart is not to make a sound. It's to pump blood, right?
Yeah.
But the sound, if you're a medical doctor, a cardiologist, you can put a stethoscope and listen to the heart and infer things about the person's health. So the meaning of the heartbeat is, well, I think you have an arrhythmia. I think you have this. But it has nothing to do with the function of the heart. I view mm-hmm. dreams the same way. Dreams mm-hmm. execute their function while they are occurring. Whether or not we remember them, what we do with the dreams we remember for personal insight, for self-discovery, for creativity, those are things that it's a bit like using the heartbeat. Those are meanings, those are uses, but they're not necessarily the function. So to come back to, do dreams have a function? I definitely think so. Mm-hmm. We know that REM sleep plays a very important role in emotional regulation. We think that dreams might tap into this and help emotional regulation, mostly by taking emotionally vivid experiences from our recent days and our distant past and exploring weak associations to them, which is why dreams are particularly often unusual, bizarre. So we dream of our high being back in high school, but the building is different. We see a character that we remember, but the voice is off. So all of these distortions and bizarreness helps untangle some negative emotions that we have from the events in which they occur. And it's basically, I believe, I can sum it up this way. I think what our minds do when we dream is they look at, what have we experienced in the last 24, 48 hours, last week, that is emotionally salient or that bother us or that's on our minds? How does it relate to things that I've experienced in the past? And so, but it examines this not like in a very, in a logical way, in ways that we often do it while awake. And the neurochemistry of the brain when we are dreaming is very different from wakefulness.
Yeah.
It allows it to explore it in very loosely associated ways. And so I believe it's like opening drawers from our past. Like if you had a big, and looking, does it fit here? Does it fit here? And so it's trying to make sense of these events by looking to what else can we connect them? And why does it do that? To better prepare us for the future. And I think that all of this takes place while the dream is unfolding, regardless if you remember your dreams or not. So many people never remember their dreams. I remember a dream a month. Yeah. So if you have to remember your dreams for them to have a function, then it's probably the most wasteful process we've ever encountered. Mm-hmm. And to have them interpreted even more wasteful, because many, many people go through their entire lives without having a single one of their dreams interpreted. So then dreams would have no function. Yeah. And then even when we talk about dream interpretation, there's over 24 contemporary methods of working with dreams. So with whom, what dream, what method, to what conclusions. So, so I think, like I said, these are all uses we can make of our dreams, and they're certainly, they can certainly be beneficial for self-discovery, for creativity. There's dream sharing evidence that even that can foster empathy between people. So there's lots of wonderful things, but the evolutionary or biological function of dreams, which I think is very important, that probably takes place while the dream is happening, regardless of whether we remember it or not.
Amazing. I mean, these are very fascinating like information about dreams, that how dreams and waking life differ, and how it can impact our waking life. But it actually also gives me another question. Actually, the question which is, could sound like more philosophical, or but it was actually asked by my son, who was 8 years old. And once he asked, and because I actually had quite a bit of discussion with my kids, so he asked me one day that, how do we know that this current waking life is not a dream and the dream is not the reality? As you mentioned, that there are like a very distinct, or there's a difference in the neural activities, you know, the mind are the act or behave in a very different way. So like, if I reframe my question, that, you know, what if that it's we are when we're experiencing in a dream is not another kind of reality, or maybe we are visiting something, or maybe it's another dimension. So do you have any answer to this?
Well, it's a very interesting and a long-standing, as you say, almost philosophical question I've played with, and artists have played with in their artwork and movies, you know, even movies like The Matrix or Inception can all play around with these basic ideas. So there's several things going on here. For one, dreams are very different from reality in that they are highly unstable. That is, dreams, things shift very quickly. You dream that you're in a park, and next thing you know, you're back home. So one way dreams differ, even in a lucid dream, for instance, if you say, okay, here I am at work. In the dream, if you ask yourself, okay, how did I get here? You probably won't remember. And the reason you don't remember is that you didn't wake up in your dream, get out of bed, have a shower, had breakfast, got into your car, took a bus. You just show up in your thing. And then so it's unstable. We also know that the world, the dream world, is very unstable. So if you stare at a point in your dream, often the dream itself will start dissolving. So the world itself is not very stable. We also know through laboratory studies that you can manipulate this dream world. So if you play certain sounds or give tactile stimuli to someone when they are in REM sleep, you can alter or change the dream world in which they're in. And so this argues against, you know, this has a certain independent reality, because you can, A, it's very unstable and shifts, but B, you can manipulate it quite readily, even in the laboratory. We also know that people have certain kinds of brain lesions. Can either, you can change the kinds of their kinds of dream experiences they have, will alter. So they might start having many kinds of nightmares, or they might start confusing dreams with reality because of certain damages in parts of their brain. So we know that alterations in brain chemistry and anatomy can alter dream experiences. So I think still the question is a fascinating one, but that a lot of modern discoveries and so on tell us this is ultimately a creation of our minds, of our brains, a bit like our imaginations are, or just like our experiences that we can have when we take certain kinds of substances that alter our perceptions. So things like psilocybin or LSD, and there's all class of substances that alter our waking perceptions and how we perceive reality. But it's often due because of what's going on within our system.
I think, that's a very valid point, that those realities are unstable and can be manipulated. So as you mentioned, that, you know, when we can manipulate the dreaming, dream escape. So I was also reading your article about that, how these companies, the marketing people, are actually manipulating these dreams and, you know, the kind of like dream hacking. So what's your point of view on that? Or maybe you can just explain that, what exactly dream hacking is.
Okay. So there is a new or relatively new field of research within sleep and dreams known as dream engineering.
Yeah.
And what dream engineering essentially tries to do is to use different forms of technology. So it can be sleep wearables, things people wear, external stimuli, tactile, visual. And people use these to, for instance, try to induce lucid dreams. They might try to use it to treat nightmares. There's different. So the ideas behind it is quite sound. It's also used to study dreams much more finely in laboratory settings. And it can also be used for creativity. So people are exploring all of this. And when I say creativity, for instance, when people fall asleep, many people will experience these different images and thoughts as they fall asleep. It can be geometric, it can be. But the further along while you fall asleep you go, the more creative these things become. And actually many famous discoveries made in sciences and arts, ideas, music, song, poetry, come from this phase of sleep known as hypnagogic states.
Yeah.
And so one example of this dream engineering is this something you can wear on your head or on your fingers and monitors as you fall asleep. And as you're falling asleep, will give you verbal cues. So instance, think about a tree. Think about, that's the simplest example. Mm-hmm. And when people are falling asleep, they might see just an image of a tree. But if you let them fall asleep a little bit more and do that, then they'll see a forest. If you let them even further, then they're not just seeing things. They're underground. They're exploring roots. They're hearing the trees communicate with each other.
Wow.
It's really quite fantastic. But usually we forget all of this because we just drift off to sleep. And so these tools then wake you up further down. You're like going down a rabbit hole, but then it brings you back up. And then you remember these things. So that's a tool, for instance, that can be used for creativity to start. And you can program. I gave you the line, think of a tree, because it was one of the first ones used, but it could be about, you know, a problem you're faced with or a solution you're looking at for some challenge. So this is the field, anyways, that's being used. Now, marketing companies also took note of this. And so their interest is, well, can we provide some kind of external stimuli when either people are falling asleep, either when they are asleep, to place products or to change people's behaviors? And so this to many scientists, and so we wrote a letter, for instance, outlining these concerns that were signed by over 40 different sleep scientists across the world, saying, this may work, this may not work, but we shouldn't wait to find out. We should have laws in place beforehand. Because, look, we're bombarded with advertisements while we are awake on television, on social media, and everywhere, radio and so on. Sleep should be sacred. Sleep should be, I shouldn't in 10 years' time saying, Ambreen, you know, pay me $10 a month and I will guarantee you, you know, ad-free dreams, right? The idea, so there's that, but also because our brains are wired very differently when we sleep, the impact of these technologies, these advertisements, are probably much stronger or different than in wakefulness. And so already 2 years ago at this advertisement conference that's held every year, this one was in New York, over 400 companies there, over 70% say they have plans in the works to develop or investigate ways of fostering advertisement or influencing people's consumer behavior through their sleep and dreams. So they're going to be doing that. And if researchers with very limited means can do it, companies with highly unlimited means. And if you think about how much advertisers are willing to pay for 30 seconds of ads on TV or in the Super Bowl. Yeah. How much are you willing to pay if you can access, you know, 6-7 hours of people's minds every single night of their lives?
Probably
a lot.
Yeah.
And just to give you an example of how powerful this could be, I'll give you two examples. In one study, people were asked, do you prefer two kinds of candies, one called M&M, one are called Skittles. Yeah. Which one do you prefer? So let's say people said M&Ms. Fine. Yeah. They go to bed. While they are in bed in a particular stage of sleep, they presented them just with a word that just said Skittles.
Skittles. Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. Very simple.
Yeah.
A significant proportion of them, when they woke up, if you ask them, do you prefer M&Ms or Skittles? They go, huh, you know what? I think I'd like to give Skittles a try.
Yeah.
Change without knowing. But an even more salient example is a study whereby people who smoke cigarettes were brought into a lab. So these are all smokers. And they were just told, while you are asleep, we might present you with different smells. We're interested in seeing how smells influence sleep. Or you might have nothing. And that's all really they were told. But while they were sleeping, they were exposed to smell of either rotten fish or rotten eggs that were combined with the smell of cigarettes.
Oh.
And this was just for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. That was it. And when people woke up in the morning, they said, do you remember any smells? Most of them said no. They thought they were in the control group. Mm-hmm. And as part of the study, they had to keep these journals at home about all kinds of behaviors, including how often they smoked before and after. Mm-hmm. When people left the lab, their consumption of cigarettes went down in some cases by 70%.
Wow.
So this is just a few seconds of which no memory of.
Yeah.
And I can't explain why I just don't feel like smoking as much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even more dramatic than that, because if you do this pairing of cigarette smell and rotten egg smell when people are awake,
it
has no effect on their behavior, right? So there's something unique about sleep and how sleep takes these stimuli and works them.
Mm-hmm.
So our concern is that we're only starting to discover how powerful our mind is during sleep, how it reorganizes our thoughts, our preferences, how it regulates, again, emotions, and that exposing ourselves to advertisement or manipulations by governments. And here we're talking about products, but it could be political, it could be
absolutely all kinds
of things down the road.
Yeah.
And again, our worry is we don't have really solid proof that this would really work at large scale, but we don't want to wait.
I mean, that's interesting, fascinating, but at the same time, it's unethical, to be honest, like manipulating others' dream by just selling some products
but it's for some companies, they don't view it as unethical because like in some studies they did, or some things, they ask people, you know, are you willing to have us, you know, give you these stimuli before you go to sleep, and we'll give you $20 or we'll give you 20% off our products. And people say, sure. But our worry there too is you have no idea what you're consenting to, because we have no idea how this will influence the brain, how it influences your mind, how, and that's why I like to give the cigarette odor study, because you change behavior and people don't even know why they're changing their behavior.
Absolutely.
And again, you do that when people are awake and it has no effect. So sleep is a very special state and has many functions in addition to whatever dreams do. And we think that should be off limits. And our concern is that, a bit like with how personal data of people from their phones and other devices was used without them knowing it and sold. People were a bit up in arms after the fact. Oh, we didn't know this, we didn't know that. And now people are passing laws, governments to try to restrict all of this, but it's a lot of it is after the fact. And here, many people sleep with modern devices in their bedrooms, Google or Alexa or whatever. Some people allow their phones or other devices to monitor their sleep, like all the sounds.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and that can be useful. For instance, to find out, do you snore? How often do you snore? And so on.
Yeah.
But you're allowing, you know, companies to monitor activity visually through sounds, whatever, throughout your sleep. People who sleep with sleep trackers are also monitoring your heart rate, your respiration rate, your, and they can put all of this together, but not just for you, for hundreds of thousands of people. And then you throw in some AI, and then you probably figure out ways of making that. And all you have to offer people is like, look, we'll offer you 20% off on this if you let us do this. And people go, sure. But again, you're not really are aware of what you're agreeing to.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary also, that, you know, how much we are at the risk of, like, you know, sharing all these data about our personal lives and how it's going to impact us. So, I mean, with the advent of technology, the way it's been rapidly changing, I mean, it's quite scary, to be honest, that, you know, that where are we heading and what's impact it gonna have on the human conscious level. And, you know, just for the sake of some, maybe like, it's not, as you mentioned, that like companies who may have the intentions to sell products, but at the moment they don't know that how it's gonna impact their subconscious mind. Just remembering having a Skittle might have a completely different impact in their lives. I mean, it's not only this, because how their brain interprets having a Skittle is another completely different story that only that person knows. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it's very scary.
But like I said, governments, here we're talking about candy, but it can be politics. You could do it with prisoners. You could do it with, you know, your opponents. It's down the road. It's not difficult to imagine these scenarios that often have played out in different films and science fiction. And, but those technologies are becoming more readily available. And like I said, we don't know if it'll work, not work, large scale. But once we have the answer, it'll be too late.
I understand. So, I mean, what steps do you recommend to, I mean, at least maybe we can raise some voice against it, or you think that it's not going to work anyways?
No, if we were sure none of this would work, we wouldn't have written letters and petitioned governments. And and again, our we think that sleep and dreams are, for lack of a better word, they're sacred. They should be hands off. They should be. Absolutely. It's the last refuge our minds have of cutting off. And we think that this cutting off sleep, and we know, is very important. It's important for our mental well-being. It's it's important for our physical well-being, for hormonal regulation, for immune system functioning, for memory consolidation. And we think that dreams probably have important biological functions too. And that, they should be off limits. But we will see. But already being able to discuss it and making people aware of these potential dangers. And there was people saying, you know, when the first smartphones were coming out and games going, look, this might be bad. This might be addictive. People soon will be unable to not look at their phone. You know, the addictive properties, especially with children, a lot of people were mentioning, look, this is potentially not good for society or for the next generation. It might impact people's ability to concentrate and pay attention and social relations, because people will be interacting virtually and not in person. So these things were being mentioned, but it everything still happened. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's time will tell that how these researches or how these experiments or and where it will lead us to. So anyways, I know this topic is so fascinating that I can actually go on and on for hours, but unfortunately the time of our show is nearing end. So what one advice would you give to our audience to maybe use sleep and dream effectively?
Well, one, encourage everyone to try to get as good quality sleep as they have. So sleep is not a waste of time. Sleep is very precious, very useful. Again, related to longevity, to our mental, physical health. So sleep is important. So don't cut on your sleep. Try to keep regular sleep hours. And the most important isn't always going to bed at the same time. It's trying to wake up at the same time. When you wake up, try to expose yourself to natural light. So if there's sun outside, open your windows. Same thing when you're traveling. These are all things that are good for your sleep. Now, for dreams, I think that if people are interested in working with their dreams, using their dreams, I think the best tool is to keep a dream diary. Because our memories for dreams are very fragile. And even if you wake up, you remember one, unless you write it down or dictate it on a smartphone, the memory will disappear. Yeah. So for people who rarely remember their dreams or they want to remember more, there's different things you can do. First is when you wake up, give yourself time to remember your dreams. Don't open your eyes, close the alarm, whatever, because then whatever was there will fade away. Mm-hmm. So if you wake up with an alarm, close it, and then lie still in bed for 10, 15, 20 seconds. See if any images come back. If nothing comes back, try gradually changing position. If you woke up on your back, turn to your side. See if anything comes back. And then anything that you remember, even if it's a fragment, a little image, a feeling, start writing them down. Start keeping a dream diary or dictating them in a phone. When you go to bed at night, you can use different things. So you can use auto suggestion. Tomorrow I will remember my dreams. You can try to fall asleep with the intention of solving a problem. This is a technique we didn't have time much to talk about, but called dream incubation, which has a very long history of thousands of years. That also has been studied in the lab and so on, but it has a very long, rich history, and for good reason, because it can be very helpful as a tool. But the idea is to keep track of dreams, of your dreams, keep a dream diary. And many people like to focus on a single dream. What does this dream mean? But there's another way of examining it, and which is to look at a series of your dreams. Look at 10, 15, 20 dreams. Who are the characters that you dream about most often? What kind of social interactions do you have with them? Are they friendly? Are they aggressive? Where do your dreams take place? Is it places that are known, unknown, from your recent life, from your distant life? So these patterns, for me, are just as interesting, and we can learn as much, if not even more, than looking at individual dreams. And one doesn't preclude the other, but having a long series of dreams is really useful.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, these are amazing tips to actually use our sleep and dreams in a way that can help us improve our waking lives. So thank you so much for enlightening us. And what is the, before I actually close the show, what is the best way our audience can reach out to you?
It depends for it depends for what. And so, I mean, they can reach out to me on some forms of social media. Email can work, but I already get you know, over 50, 60 emails a day, every day of the year. So that's, at times that gets a little overwhelming. And I do clinical work, I do research, I teach. So there's a lot of, a lot going on. But if they're interested in learning more about sleep and dreams, as you mentioned, there's a few videos already available on YouTube. I have a book called When Brains Dream. I've also written a novel. that blends dream mythology with some science, but it's a inventive world that's called the Dream Keepers. So if people want to sort of get a flavor of these things, there's multiple sources out there.
Okay, that's great. I already shared your website link in the comments section. So people who want to know more about your work, they can also check out the website. So thank you so much for sharing these great, knowledge, and that I've been actually waiting for so long. So thank you so much. I hope that our audience must have learned a lot from you from our today's session. So thanks a lot.
Thank you very much again for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Sweet dreams.